Hey yo, and here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, the King of the Casters. But I'm not the important one here today. The important one that's joining me, oh my lord, this fellow has played for so many acts. He's played with Billy Idol, Whitesnake, Foreigner, Ozzy, Sass Jordan. The reason that we're here to talk to him today is of his new band, Silverthorn. He is the drummer, Brian Tishy. Brian, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing? And thanks for having me.
Oh, well, super happy to have you. And here's the interesting thing is that, we've talked to a lot of people, and anytime your name comes up, everybody says wonderful things. Like Sass Jordan couldn't say nicer things about you. Doug Aldrich just was talking about you. You know, your name comes up and it's good news. So we really wanted to have you on the show.
Well, that's very nice to hear that they said nice things because I owe them both money. Jeez. Wow. You know, yeah, that's cool. At least they're not bringing that up on the air.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, the people you're talking to are people I've worked with, and we've crossed paths over the decades, and we've gotten to be musical together and play music and tour and write and create and do things that we have dreams about together. So, you know, hopefully when you get together with those people, you end up, you know, forging great relationships and friendships that last, forever. Doug and Sass in particular, they're amazing musicians and great people. And it's great to see that, whether we're working together or not, they're out there kicking ass.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the thing. And I mean, you've worked with so many people that I can well imagine that it must help to kind of have a good attitude and to be able to get along in almost any situation.
I wouldn't have worked with all of them, but it usually ends with me owing them money, so I just have to quit and just move on because I can't handle the fact that, you know, I've borrowed too much money and lie to them and stuff, so it just makes me go down the road into another band.
Oh yeah, well there you go. Yeah, I guess I could ask what you need the money for. Is it more drums?
I just have massive spending problems and they're out of control and it's always been that way. So you know, it leads me to massive problems. No, I'm just wasting time here. No, man, it's all cool. It's great. You just want to be a decent person and you don't want to be a dickhead. And you know, it's like anything, man. I don't care where you come from, what you're about. As long as you know, if you're nice, I'm nice back, and that's it. Especially if you're working together as musicians and doing anything with that involves being creative. You know, this business can be crazy. You know, you could be in one band for however long, be having a great time, and with a certain thing that happens, dynamics in that band, go to another situation, and there's people that maybe you don't gel with in the same way, you know, and it's hit or miss every time. But thankfully, I can say, you know, 99.9 or whatever, I've had all, you know, great experiences and I'm friends with just about everybody I've worked with. And man, it's nice because when you look back, you go, shit, I haven't seen or talked to you in 10 years. You know, man, we did all that shit together and it's great to see you and you still have a good relationship. You know, it's like, it's just a part of life, man. You want to get down, you know, yeah, as the years go by, it's just nice to know when you travel around, whether it's the city, the country, or the world, you can run into people you have nice experiences with, whether it's last year or 20 years ago. You know, it's important. It keeps your heart, soul, and mental stability together.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, just from a sheer monetary perspective, not necessarily owing anybody money, but the idea that you know, having a good relationship means that you'd probably be always first on the speed dial when something comes up. I know you've come back to Foreigner a couple of times to play, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's Foreigner, man. That's even that band in particular, and Mr. Mick Jones, the founder, and the man who started it all and wrote the songs, you know, I grew up on Foreigner, so it doesn't matter where I am or what time of the year or what year it is. I look to Mick just as, because he was always so cool with me. He was just from day one, such a great guy, and gave me the living, you know, at that particular time, and 1998 when I joined Foreigner first, which still included Lou Gramm, the mighty badass Lou Gramm. When Mick heard me play on a demo of theirs and said to the producer, you know, who's that drummer? And they contacted me and said, Mick wants to jam with you. He was just so cool and brought me into his world. And I am the kid. I am the 10-year-old kid in freaking 1978 that heard Hot Blooded on the radio and just fell in love with it and got double vision. And you're talking 10 years old learning to play drums. That is one of the records, and that it has a huge, you know, memory to me as something that affected me greatly as a little kid in the summer of 78 playing the Hot Blooded and learning how to do, for anybody who's a non-drummer, you probably don't care about this, but drummers out there, there's a little double skip on the kick drum. I didn't know how to do that. I love the sound of it. I'm a, like I said, a 10-year-old kid just like learning every day about drums and loving drums and learning over 2 weeks of sucking at doing a double skip, a double stroke with my right foot. It finally coming together one day, and it was Hot-Blooded, and it was just sitting there playing over and over and over to that song. So when you become a grown-up and you get a chance to play all those songs with that band and the guy who wrote them is cool with you and just a really nice person, and you know, even if you're not in the band, they call you back, hey, I joined a couple times, I filled in, and just to know that's there on this planet is really cool. You know, it's just nice, and it's a very satisfying feeling to know that, you know, that little kid who learned from that record could, you know, go on to be in that band and play that song. And there wasn't a night that went by when I didn't look over at Mick when he's going, yeah, and play that, and I'll look over and go, man, I feel like a 10-year-old kid playing this, and here I am in my 30s or whatever, you know.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's worth more than any paycheck, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, and here's one of the interesting things, like, and I can relate to a certain degree in my case, is that one thing I've found as we go through and do these interviews and get to talk to fantastic people like you is that the people that we're talking to, they're really very human. Like, I think fans tend to put, you know, rock stars and musicians and such on a pedestal, and then when you meet them and when you talk to them, and so many of them are just so fantastic and easy to talk to, that what an amazing situation it winds up being, because it's like we're all people, but, you know, and we all have these wonderful things in common, and I think it turns out to be really, really great a lot of the time.
The perception of a rock star, because which I am not, I'm just a drummer who loves music and loves playing guitar and hopes to have my own band, is become successful. That was the dream as a kid, worshiping Zeppelin and Kiss and Van Halen and Aerosmith and all that, you know. But you know, rock and roll, you know, 1955, whenever the exact beginning was, you know, you've got Elvis and just, it was like this, it was the same as a movie star, you know, you're exposed to such a high level, and people are freaking out about you, and, you know, Elvis is probably just the nicest, most normal guy who just loves singing and being a musician, but he was catapulted to the stratosphere success wise and you know, to this day, one of the biggest, you know, most well-known faces on the planet or whatever. But yeah, most people, there are, you know, there are true rock stars that get to that level, and they are, you know, those Freddie Mercury's and David Lee Roth's, and you see them, and that's all you can see is the rock star. I mean, that's what it is, but they give it off. They do it so well. They play the part. But I mean, yeah, man, when the door's shut and the you know, and everything's calmed down, I mean, everybody, you know, people are people, you know, you still have to go into the kitchen and pour yourself a glass of water, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, yeah, most people are cool, man. It's just all about perception, you know, it's how people react to the perceptions that they're perceiving.
Yeah, right, for sure. Well, you know, let's jump in. The reason that we're here is to talk about Silverthorne now. We got Pete Scholder on vocals on the guitar, you, of course, on drums, and Daniel Spree on bass. The Tear the Sky Wide Open is killer, and I think everybody, that's the gist of what I'm seeing from the fans so far, is that everybody's loving it. And I know that you've got an EP coming out, I think that's early next year, is it?
Yeah, we're not exactly sure of the release date yet. We're sorting that out now. But it's nice to hear you say that about the first single. It's a bit nerve-wracking because, you know, you're sitting there alone and, you have the label that signed you, obviously is excited, and maybe a couple of your friends that heard the tune, you know. But when it gets out there for real, you know, you hope that that the reaction is there and people dig it and it creates something to get you to the next level. And with everything we had written, that song seemed to best represent a good starting point of what Silverthorne's about and drive a point home quickly. You know, just get out there and say, hey, here's a big old guitar riff. Here's a powerful production. Here's a great singer, and here's a rock song, and hopefully you can sing along to it, and bang your head a little bit, and groove to it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's one of the interesting things about it is because, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, Golden Robot, it's just, I wondered like, how, when you released this, how long did you expect for the song to kind of take to reach the fans? Has it reached it faster, or is it about where you're expecting?
Well, I had no idea. I don't think any of us did. I'm not a music analyst and don't know how people figure that shit out. But I just, all we could hope for is that, okay, we have our basic social media, but social media is so important nowadays, but I'm only one drummer dude with a new band. You know, there's only so much, I'm not, I don't have a million followers and blah, 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 whatever. But, we have a label behind us. They have a promotion team. They're going to get it out. They're going to get a press release out there, and they're going to get the single out, and we're going to do what we can. They're going to do what they can. But really, it's sort of easy. It's like back in the day with cassettes, you're sitting with your buddy and you have something, you could burn him a cassette, make a copy on a cassette of stuff that you have on a record. He takes it home, cranks it, and then you're trading cassettes and a la the old school way of Metallica getting out there in the underground and all that stuff. Cause I was a teenager when that was going on, and that's what you were doing. That's how you college radio, burn cassettes, It's sort of similar with social media, man. If somebody likes it, they could just share it to their friends, share it to their followers, and it's not, you're not sitting here just waiting for that with just going, okay, hopefully we're gonna get lucky and it's gonna be shared by a million people and everybody's gonna love it. You got to work it, but there is that element that does happen, and it's been out since the middle of August, and we just found out today. I don't know, in North America, the U.S., Canada, I don't know how well known this is, but just from touring around and stuff, we just found out that it's going to be premiered on Planet Rock Radio in the U.K., which is the U.K.'s biggest, most important radio station, and they only play like 400 bands a week. And we just found out today that we're going to be on that radio station. They have a huge reach, a huge following. A lot of people are listening. That people take note when they play a new band. So it was really great news. Now, does that mean, hey, all of a sudden we're going to have the next, Smells Like Teen Spirit happening or whatever? No, it just means it's great exposure. And that's all we can hope is that transfers into the next bit of, areas that the song can get out and get exposure. And it's all the beginning. It's all, the sort of baby steps. It's a beginning stages, but every little step upward in this uphill battle is a good step. And we're behind it. We're not throwing it out there sitting at home waiting for somebody to report back to us saying, hey man, we put a ton of money into it. Everything's great, man. You just made a, everything, you're going on this huge tour. You have a ton of fans. We got to work it, and it takes time. And I don't have any false expectations or just because we think it's great, it's going to, make us, the next household name. But I'm hopeful and I'm confident and I believe in it, and that's really all you can have. And I hope we get the opportunities to prove ourselves, as a live band, and get out there and get that exposure and throw it out in front of fans and win them over.
Yeah, well, and I can imagine that, especially with an August release of the track, that and not even knowing when the album's going to be released, it must be a little difficult to kind of be waiting for that specific date. Because usually, I think we see, you know, an actual release date, and it's fairly close to the song being released. So, I mean, this way, you probably do get a chance to build up a lot of momentum, ideally.
You know, yeah, and we have the chance to build up a lot of momentum. Does that mean we can build up a lot of momentum? It's, you know, there's so many factors involved, you know, from us personally to the label and everybody working the record. How, you know, it's one of the simple questions is simply how much money can we put behind this? You know, like, because there's, you know, you get some band out there that has an investor or a lot of money behind them. They can do a lot of damage quickly with, you know, with creating an impact, you know, when you have some funding, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going on, you know, kind of where, you know, if you're going on where we're at, you know, with a brand new band on a just sort of newer label, you know, we understand it's not going to work like that. You know, we just got to believe it and get behind it. But getting back to the release date, the release date, we have a tentative one, but we have a plan. There is a timeline going on. But first thing first is there's a second single and a video coming out next month. We're in the middle of editing the video now, and I can't wait for it to come out because it's a completely different type of song than Tear the Sky Wide Open, and yet it just features Pete Shoulders' amazing vocals, and so I can't wait for that to come out. And but it's still cut from the same cloth, production-wise and sonically. You know, it's not, we're not straying away from that. It's just a different type of song. And that second single, you know, gets promoted, and we continue trying to build off of that. And then the EP comes out. It's just a matter of, you know, we're trying to figure out the exact date. You know, but no, we're not doing single and then a month later an EP. You know, we didn't want to do that,
right?
Because it's brand new. You know, we wanted to build it, and also taking into account that these days, there's, as much as I love LPs, there's so many people out there that aren't so concerned with buying a full LP. So an EP is cool, but really it's just getting out there as a brand new entity with that song. You know, people want a song, they like it, they download it, they're interested, and hopefully they stay interested. How long, I don't know, but I don't think people stay interested in one song and become a fan of a band for a year of one song. You know, so you just get it rolling, and it's, you know, it's a big world out there, man. There's a lot of places to play the song, a lot of countries, and a lot of opportunity that's still coming our way, which is nice to know. So we don't want to wait too long, and we also don't want to just throw it all out there and go, here it all is, and, you know, we didn't really set it up right, you know?
Yeah, of course, because that was one of my questions, is why an EP as opposed to a full-length album. But here's an interesting thing, is that I just talked to somebody who wrote a little too many songs for a full album, so he's actually releasing it as four EPs over a course of several months. And I thought, you know,
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and I just thought that was a really interesting strategy for getting the music out there.
Well, I mean, I know even Liam Gallagher, you know, just putting out a single, like, I don't know, every week, single, then the record. Everybody's got their own way of doing it, but a lot of people are doing EPs now. And I remember even, I don't know, a few years ago, reading about the band Down. They think they did like three EPs over the course of a year. Just heard, I think, Skid Row's doing EPs.
Yep.
Didn't even Greta Van Fleet, I think, did an EP. You know, their brand new band came out with an EP. And really, it was all revolved around their one song. The one song in the whole, you know, oh, they you know, it's a Zeppelin thing, you know. And they, I don't know who was behind them or what kind of promotion they had or any of that stuff. I just know that's what you heard. It was really based off of one song, and that created enough interest. And like I said, these days, man, as sad as it is, and as much as I love the idea of hearing a song from a band, which I think we all did many times, hear that song on the radio and they go, that was blah 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 by blah blah blah, and you go, I gotta go buy that record. You run to the store, and there was the day and age of 45s, you know, and you had one other song on the other side.
Yep.
And you know, that was prior to that, yeah, it was all singles at the beginning of the rock and roll. Everything was about singles. Yeah, the records came out, but it was all about singles. We're sort of back to that place now, And I don't even get it. Like, I just grew up on, like, I need to buy the next Kiss record. I need to buy the next Van Halen record. I got to buy my Rush record. Like, I want the whole record. I want to stare at it. I want to read it, everything inside. I want to stare at the pictures. I want to just be engulfed by the sound of an entire LP playing, you know, blasting out of my speakers or in my headphones for the 45 minutes or 30, whatever it is. That's the experience I wanted, even by just hearing one song on the radio by a band I didn't know. I want to find out all about that band and what they're doing at that period of their career in recording, you know? So I love that. But sad but true, it's just not that big of a thing to people buying music these days. And, you know, it's got to do with the internet. It's got to do with downloading. It's got to do with, you know, whether it was iPods and iPhones and, you know, just all that, which is, there's great stuff about it. But somewhere there, somehow the idea of buying a full LP is just not as enticing. But to me it is. I still do it, yeah. And I hear a song from somebody, a band that I dig, I want the whole record. And it's just, but that's just how I am.
Oh, I'm the same way. I'm a discography person. Like, I'll just sit around and be like, you know, I should listen to the entire discography of this artist than just churn through the whole thing, because it's just like, I want to listen to everything, and I mean everything.
That's a tall order. That's a full day right there, man. That's cool.
It can get crazy, no question about it. Why Silverthorn?
You mean
the name?
Why the band itself or the name?
The name.
Oh, because it sounds really cool.
All right.
we were throwing a bunch of stuff around, and maybe with other bands, somebody comes up with something quickly and it sticks and it works. We've heard stories about how bands' names would come together, but ours, it was simple. We had a list, we had another list, we didn't like this, we didn't like that, another list. And one of these lists, this Silverthorn without the E somehow, was on one of the lists. And I was like, cool, that sounds pretty simple and catchy. And we didn't have the idea of we need a color in the name or anything like that, because I don't even think of it like that. Silverthorn is a plant, and if it's left unattended, it will grow and overtake all other plants around it. It will completely grow quickly and just overcome the area. And I was like, that's kind of cool, man. That's just like left on its own, it's just going to keep growing. And we went with it.
Nice. All right. Yeah, it's
put the, I think we put the E on the end. Now I can't remember. I think we just threw the E on the end because we liked the way it looked.
Yeah. it's always interesting because especially when you're doing a new band, you know, what does go into the naming of that band when you're trying it? Because so many bands have been called so many things nowadays, so it's got to be hard to find that name that you feel really suits you.
Yeah, it wasn't, you also have to understand, not you, just when you're going through that process, it means a lot, you know, it's going to represent you, that's the sound of that name, just being said over and over, you will become tied in with your sound of the band, and so you want it to be cool, but then you go, well, what is cool? Because really anything's cool if it ties into good music, so when you hear... Oh, that was the first single from The Cars. Now, we say The Cars, and we all know The Cars. Yeah. We know The Cars. They've been around forever. They have tons of amazing songs. But there was a time there was no The Cars, right? And The Cars were, if you said, The Cars are parked over there. You know, it just that sound didn't sound right. I don't think it's the best name. You know what I mean? It's not a killer name to me. Or if I told you we were called The Firemen, you might say, what's up with the firemen? Like, do you even you chuckle a little bit, but what if I said we're called the police? You know what I mean? The police, automatically, you think of this. The police, you think of all their hit songs, you think of the image of the three members of the band, and you instantly associate it with the sound. You know, and all of a sudden, it's like, police, fucking badass. You know what I mean? But before there was the police, it sounded a little odd. You know what I mean? If I said we were called Lamp... Lamp. You go, Lamp? The hell? What? Yeah, but if we had a badass single and everybody, you know, was into us, all of a sudden Lamp would just be a cool sounding name. So you really don't have to worry about it so much, but at the same time, I mean, Red Hot Chili Peppers, that's a pretty long name. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, it's odd. Jane's Addiction. It was odd, but that it was odd and cool. Soundgarden sounded almost happy. You know what I mean? Right. It sounded like almost like it's going to be poppy-ish. But I had already immediately, it was in a metal magazine, I saw a picture of the band. So now I've got this image of that whatever you call it, grungy-looking band, which started this whole huge movement in music. They were called Soundgarden. All of a sudden, like, whoa, that sounds a little heavy. And then you read, they're kind of like Zeppelin and Sabbath. And you're like, whoa, this is, you know what I mean? The band's name had a different, now it's perceived differently.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all cool, man. It's all cool. It's just like, hopefully you just don't, hopefully you enjoy saying the name of your band just a little bit, so it's not, it doesn't suck that much.
Well, you don't want to get stuck with like the one guy who's like, oh, I really fucking hate that name.
I don't know if I'd ever really be going along with like Hootie and the Blowfish. I don't know if that would be something like, it's just that wouldn't see, but nobody cared because they had a hit song.
That's right.
Everybody dug it. But you had to say Hootie and the Blowfish, and maybe there's an awesome story behind it. Now, Steely Dan, I don't know why, but man, that sounds kind of cool. You know what I mean?
Like, I agree, yeah.
Does it make sense? I don't know. Nobody knows. Yeah, I mean, I know where the name came from, but you don't know when you hear them on the radio in the 70s. You hear all these amazing songs. Steely Dan just sounded cool, man. Fleetwood Mac? What? You know, it sounds great. Sounds cool. Van Halen, man, I was like, I just thought Van Morrison, as a kid, I was like, Van Halen sounds too, I just thought Van Morrison, I was like, that sounds too nice, it sounded like more safe or something, but put on Van Halen and it's, you know, it's game over.
That's right, not safe there.
Yeah. And so, I do love, I don't want to go off on this tangent, but I do love that from the beginning, you know, from the first time I read it, David Lee Roth does say, he said, let's call the band Van Halen, which I think was very, very kind of him being who he was in the front man.
Yes.
I figure he should have maybe said, let's call the band Roth. Let's call it Roth. But he said Van Halen. Hell, I wouldn't have had a problem with Roth. I guess that's fine. David Lee Roth's the front man. They're Roth. But, yeah, Van Halen. If he said that, good on him, you know. Cool call, man. Nice, nice way of thinking about the bigger picture. You know?
I mean, hey, it's a cool sounding name, no question about it. So,
one of the best logos ever. One of the best Van Halen 2 cover. One of my favorite. But Drum Tech in Japan on my birthday gave me a shirt. Just has a little Van Halen, just the word Van Halen on the front chest, but on the back it's got the Van Halen 2 logo. I love that logo. Love that album cover.
Yeah, it's true. I actually, because when I've seen Van Halen twice with both singers, with both main singers, I guess. But
right.
And the one that I have is the update that they did with Sammy Hagar, which is still a very cool logo. And then it says on the back, it says Van Halen kicks ass, and I'm like, yep, they do.
Yeah, they didn't spend much time working on a killer original phrase for that shirt.
Nope.
They said, let's keep it simple.
Yep. But it's just like,
ass.
Yep, right. It worked for me, though.
Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of kicking ass, now I know that, the anniversary of John Bonzo Bonham's passing just occurred, and I know that you're a big fan of his. You know, tell me...
Who?
John Bonham and his birthday. It was his birthday, I guess. So.
John, did you say Bonham?
Bonham? Bonham?
I think I've heard of him.
Yeah, yeah. The guy that, bashed skins with Zeppelin. Yeah.
Totally. Man. Yesterday was the 39th anniversary of his passing.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
I was so busy in the morning, it escaped me until like the middle of the day, and I'm like, sorry, go ahead with your question before I start with a babbling on about something.
Well, no, I mean, because that was really what I wanted, was you to babble on a little bit about him, because I know that he meant so much to you, and as a drummer, especially talking about other drummers, like, I think it's always interesting to me to know, like, what goes into the to the form of drumming, and then especially like what makes a killer drummer like you look at John Bonham and say like, okay, he's the gold standard?
Oh yeah, for so many reasons he is, and I'm not the only one. So that it's at the point where it just goes without saying. It's just that's the level he's at, and it's just go to any rock drummer. It's from any era, and you're just going to hear the same stuff over and over. And it's just he had just such a huge impact from right out of the gate, you know, from song one up to the final recording, up to all the bootlegs, to the live releases. There's so much happening on a level that everybody's just. It's so entertaining. It's so groovy. It's so powerful. It's so musical. There had to be one person. There had to be one guy, and it's John Bonham. You know, on so many levels. And as a kid, I don't know why his groove resonated with me. It moved me, and it made me think about it. It made me think why am I feeling this from this groove? Why are these tones affecting me like this? You know, and. Of course, it's not just John Bonham. There's a lot of influences and inspirations and all that kind of stuff. But he really is the biggest to me, and probably the biggest influence to most rock drummers, which led me to coming up with this Bonzo Bash celebration event back in 2010. It was just a little idea that I actually saw through and saw if I could make it happen. But it was simply because of how not a day goes by where I don't think about John Bonham's sound or listen to something, and it's just always there, and that's pretty cool. It's pretty crazy. I'm a drummer. I love drums. I think about drums all the time. Yeah, I think about music all the time. But yeah, somewhere in there, he was the one that affected me the most. And yesterday being the 39th anniversary of his passing, I posted a little something, and then I was like, I went through this weird process of a little weird thought process, which ultimately involved texting my buddy Stephen Perkins and Jimmy DeAnda, two badass drummers. Something in my head popped in. I texted them. It said, "Remember this." It was some funny thing that that we all did, and then that led me to explain to them in another text what I was thinking. I was like, now that I finished my day, like I got all the stuff done I was doing, I'm sitting here next to my drums, and I'm like, well, I don't want to take advantage of this day and go, oh, and I do the Bonzo Bash all the time and blah 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 Bonzo Bash. It's like self promotion. I just wanted to make it about Bonham, and then anything I posted. And then I thought, okay, well maybe I'll just go down tonight and get Bonham's three circle logo tattooed on me. Maybe I'll do that. I'm like, I don't feel like going out. I don't feel like getting another tattoo. I'm not, but that would be cool to do on this date. You know what I mean? That'd be cool. So I was like, I don't know if I really feel like doing that. I wasn't planning on it. And I went, well, I'm sitting here with my drums. Why don't I just like put my iPhone up and play a little something on the drums? So I went down a rabbit hole. It ended up becoming a thing, because as soon as I go, yeah, I'm going to do that, then I have to start thinking, well, what am I going to do? How's my snare drum sound? Do I have to retune anything? Okay, where's the phone going to be? How's it going to sound through the phone? And I start doing that. So I go down this rabbit hole or a bottom hole, if you will, and it becomes a thing. It becomes, now it's not just 5 minutes of playing a drum beat. It becomes, well, what should I play? Well, wait, should I try and do this? Should I? It went on for hours. And I filmed a few clips of me playing my drums, and I put them on social media. But that was, to me, I was like, cool. That's it seemed appropriate, a cool thing to do on the anniversary of my favorite drummer. You know, split little drums and in spirit of him, with themes and grooves that are they're mainly tips of the hat to his style.
Now, one of my favorite drummers I just recently heard is in ill health. That's Ginger Baker, and I think he's a wonderful drummer as well. Do you like? What do you think of Ginger?
Yeah, Ginger's great. I was not exposed enough to Ginger as a kid. Just there's stuff I was turned on to, just from the radio or on my own or friends, and. One of the drummers I was turned on a lot more to, like, Mitch Mitchell and John Densmore from The Doors, even, like, yeah. And Keith Moon. You know, that for some reason, there was nobody around me cranking, Cream and stuff like that. But over the years, of course, I'm a fan of Ginger's, and I did hear about that today, and I was surprised to hear I think they said he's 80, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, hey, I don't know if 30, 40 years ago, people would have thought they'd be able to say Ginger Baker turned 80. You know what I mean?
Guaranteed.
Some of these guys lived hard lives, man. And so I was like, man, that's awesome. He made it to 80 years old. I hope I get to 80. I'm planning on seeing 100, but that's great. You know, it was more like, that sucks to hear about his health, but at the same time, damn, I don't think we would have been surprised if we found out something happened to Ginger in his 40s, or whatever. So shit, that was actually as much of a bummer it was to hear the news. I was still like, that's great to hear, that he's still here,
Yeah, no, that
at
is
that age. I mean, I knew he was alive. I was like, I didn't know if he was 72,
sure,
75, 80, 82. I just hadn't thought about it. So yeah.
Now, to get to you, talk about the drums, but I know you also like to play guitar and sing as well, and I know that you've had a lot of music put into TV and that kind of thing. So when it comes to, drums obviously your main source of income, I guess, but when do you decide to find the time to play guitar and sing?
I'm not a great singer. I have and blah blah blah, but it's nothing compared to like a real singer. But guitar, I love, man. I've been playing guitar since seventh grade. I got really into it, and it took doing these Randy Rhoads Remembered celebration events we started doing a few years ago. It took putting those on to realize that the main record that made me say, I've got to play guitar more, I want to do this, I want to learn how to do that, was Blizzard of Oz, was Randy Rhoads' Blizzard of Oz. I was already into guitar, but that just kind of just stuck out to me so heavily and so quickly, and I became I just started playing guitar way, way, way more, and wanting to learn. And we're talking that was 1980, so I guess, yeah, man, it was the 80s. It was the age of the insane guitar hero and the virtuosos, and it just kept going and going. And from, of course, starting with Van Halen and just getting right into the Rhodes and then everybody else that came out in the 80s. But yeah, man, I love guitar. I bring a guitar with me on the road, which was great when I was playing drums in Japan all summer. I've got a guitar with me, it's in the apartment we're staying at. It's I take it if we travel for a few days, I bring it with me. Can't stand sitting around in hotel rooms and not knowing that there's no guitar and I can't play. Like, it's always there. I play as much as I can, and I love it. So I just like any musician, there's certain times you're playing an instrument more than other times. If I'm writing or recording and it involves guitar, I'm playing a lot. If I'm on tour, on tour playing drums, I still may be playing quite a bit of guitar in the hotel room. So, yeah, I mean, you have a musician who mainly plays guitar and plays drums and guitar. So I hope to be playing constantly, and I wish I was playing my instruments as much and practicing them as much as some of my friends out there that I know are just nonstop. Whether it's I have so much respect for it, whether it's Bumblefoot, who plays constantly, or it's Phil X, who plays, never puts a guitar down, or Zach Wilde, he never puts a guitar down. And it's just, and I'm like, man, they always find that time in the day to get behind their instrument and put that time in. And sometimes that doesn't happen with me. So yesterday was a good day. I was like, I'm gonna sit behind the drums and play a little bit, and I'm gonna, it's always fun, man. I love playing. I wish I could be playing. I wish I was on a schedule. I could be playing every day for a bunch of hours.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, as a fan, to think about what a musician does go through in their day. Like, you practically think like, oh, well, I mean, what do? You get up, you start playing or whatever, or you go on tour, you write music. I mean, but you do have a life outside of that and other things that you have to do.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you just got to balance it like anything. But it's like anything. Okay, I want to go mountain biking. Okay, I got to get this stuff done. I got to fit that in at this portion of the day. I have kids. They're going to get picked from school. I've got these errands to run. I've got these phone interviews to do. Or I've got these some stuff that we need to grab from the store or whatever. When I'm home, I'm busy doing family stuff and all that. But you just balance it. And I like to, I like guitars being left around, just like an acoustic in this room or a Les Paul in that room. Like, it's always a reminder to, to pick it up and play. A pair of sticks and a pad here, or just, it's just always, I have a studio house. So, you walk in the living room, there's the drums, they're just always there ready to be played, There's always, Sometimes you're too busy, but sometimes you're like, there really is no excuse right now. This is what I do, and it's only going to make me better if I sit down and put the time in, But I love playing, I wish I did have a reason every day and a schedule that allowed me to dedicate more time to instruments and being creative, for sure.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions that I'm interested in is, When you're playing with different bands and such, and especially going into your own stuff like Silverthorn, do you have a specific drum kit that you prefer, where it's just like this amount of drums? I mean, I understand that would have to change if you wanted to play, Bonzo stuff, but is there a consistent Brian Tichy set, or is there just something where whatever the song needs, you're going to put up?
Usually, my default favorite type of kit is basically a Bonham setup. That's kind of the look and what is in what the drums involved. That type of setup are kind of like industry standard to me. But it usually that includes a bigger bass drum with no muffling and no hole in it. So it creates a hole. That's a different. It's a different beast when you play that kind of bass drum, and it has a different impact, and it just sounds different in a rock band. But it's basically that kind of kit, and sometimes I'll add to it. But also other times if I'm on a tour that doesn't need that kind of bass drum or that kind of kit, I'll play, what works for the band. I used a double bass kit in Japan all summer. They've had drummers with double bass on their stage, so I was like, cool, let's do that, so it depends on the setting. But for me, my first choice, although I do love big ass kits and all that stuff, and I would love to incorporate that into original music, there's definitely a side of me that loves all that more progressive, let's just call it more along the lines of a Neil Peart type kit or something like that. But for what we're doing and the big picture of what it also looks like on stage, it opens up. If you have a smaller kit, meaning it might be big drums but not a ton of drums, you could be seen a little bit easier live. So if you are adding to the show visually or anything like that, you're just a little bit more. You're visible from just anywhere in the audience if you don't have a huge kid around you, a la like Nico McBrain. I think it's from Iron Maiden. I think it's hard to see him from a lot of places when you're watching Maiden live. And he's a killer drummer, one of my favorites. And but to really see what he's doing, you kind of got to get behind the kid. I'll play anything. But if you're even recording, man, if I can record a Bonham type kit. I love being able to get that opportunity because it's just got a different sound to it. Wide open drums, bigger drums, wide open bass drum, everything singing and ringing together and recording it in a nice acoustic room. That's probably what excites me the most is achieving being able to get great tones from a kit like that, and have that transfer into the final mix of a song. I like that process the most.
Oh, that's cool. Now I know I'm closing in on the end of my time. I want to talk about, you talked about performing live and stuff like that, and so let's talk about Silverthorn and the possibility of performing with that band live.
Yeah, that's another element of everything we're putting together. Of course we want to get out and play live. Of course I want to tour the world. Of course I want to get as much exposure and play in front of as many people as possible. We are ready right now for any backyard barbecue at any stadium. You know, we just need we want the exposure, and we just need to figure out and work it and get those figure out how to get these opportunities coming our way. You know, and a lot of it is if there's a fan base and people hear it and like it, and you just start to make your impact. You start small and build from there. But yeah, we definitely are. I mean, it's an exciting time because it's so new, and I really have no clue where this will end up or get to. I just know where I want it to go, as we all do in the band and as the label does, and hopefully anybody that likes the first single probably I would hope they want to see us move on and move onward and upward. But right now, man, it's just you just kind of do as much as you can with what you know, and hopefully it just keeps growing, you know. We're going to start booking a couple shows soon, you know, like Vegas and LA, because that's where myself and Daniel are. Pete's in the UK. He'll cruise over and we'll get that going. Maybe we'll go back and hit a little UK run, just anything to get your feet wet. And then of course we're, you know, looking for opening slots. You know, we're friends with a lot of bands, and you have to kind of see who's out there, who might give us that opportunity to go and open for them, which would be amazing if we got on some tours where we get exposed to other fans of other bands and win them over and prove ourselves, you know. And of course festivals, you know, anywhere. But that's why it's a good time right now, being, you know, September, October, getting the word out there, building the band up. So by next year, that EP's out, you know, hopefully there's a fan base and we've gotten made some connections and people are aware of us, and hopefully those, you know, it goes along with this, also comes along, you know, managers, agents, all that stuff. You know, those are key people. If, you know, you get a great management team behind you with great connections that can tie in to many things, as can an agent. You know, agents all around the world, you know, that look up different countries, you know, if they take you on and get you involved in, whether it's, you know, the opening slots on festivals, it doesn't matter. You go play a place like Download, which used to be Donington in the UK, it doesn't matter what time of day you play there. It doesn't matter if you only get 25 minutes. You're gonna play in front of a lot of people, and you're getting a lot of press. And if you do some damage in those 25 minutes and you prove yourselves, man, that carries quickly. You know, it carries a lot of weight. So those, you know, it really doesn't matter what time of the day you're playing, as long as you just are you get those opportunities to be there in front of the people, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's all in the melting pot right now. It's all stuff that we're putting together.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I know that I'd love to see you guys live. And I guess it also helps if you're not doing like too many other things. So like you're focused on Silverthorn, ready to make this band work at this moment.
That is the focus, and that's where the constant and interesting balance lies in my life. You want to see something that's new, that you have, you know, confidence and you believe in. You want to see it happen, but you also got to work. You gotta pay your bills. So I never in a million years would think, okay, we got a record deal, we put a single out, all of a sudden we're going to be working full time. That would be ridiculous to think. I'm fully aware of what it takes to make this happen, and I'm also fully aware that in that, being home now from, I was just gone for 4 months in Japan, so I did, you know, did good solid work there, and I have some other stuff taking up a little bit of time next year, but it's kind of broken up where this band should be able to have, you know, have my full attention, and it's ready to go, you know, and so hopefully everything's lined up where we get those opportunities getting into next year, you know. So it would be the best thing if down the road a bit you and I talked again and I was like, yeah man, just finished however many months of touring and the EP's selling and, you know, we're kind of going back out and if we're working. You know, because we're, you know, none of us are sitting here with these little, you know, little thoughts of, yeah, man, we're going to be on, you know, the nicest hotels and tour buses and blah, blah, you know, whatever. You know, we're fully aware of whatever it takes, man. I'm ready to get in the trenches, which I do when I have to. especially for my own music. You know, I've done tours in Europe with my buddies back, I don't know, a few years ago, my buddies Doug Aldrich and Michael Devon. We were all in, Michael plays bass in Whitesnake. Doug, you know, of course, was on guitar in Whitesnake for a long time. But we do some club tours, just playing covers for fun. But it was a lot of fun because we called the shots. We made the rules. We played music we loved. People came out to see us do something that we're not doing anywhere else. It was small clubs, and you know, and we got paid. You know what I mean? So yeah. It was, but we were in the trenches, meaning there was nothing special about the travel, and I didn't care because I was hanging out with my buddies, and I didn't care whatever it takes, man. Just get us to the next gig. We're gonna have a blast. You know, if the gear isn't the best there, I'll figure it out, man. We're having fun, and that was just a cover band, and we did that a few times, and we were actually building up a little bit of a following, which we could have kept going with if we wanted, but everybody gets busy and stuff like that. But it was a fun cover thing. And but yeah, you put me in that same situation with my own music and get me out doing that, I'm happy as anything, man, because now I really have something to prove. I have something to prove that means a lot to me, you know. So I want that to be brought on, you know, for sure. Just let me get out there and do it, man. I'll do everything that's needed, and we will make an impression, and we will win people over. But right now, we just got to, you know, put it all together and get out there and figure out where to go and the best ways to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll give you the chance right now to plug all things Silverthorn. Tell the fans where to find you.
It's easy because we all have that internet thing now. So we're on all social media. You can go to YouTube and check out the video for Ten Sky Wide Open, the first single, and it's a really cool video. Did it on our own. Woke up one morning, went on top of a canyon with a ton of fog behind us. Didn't expect it to be that foggy, but it certainly added to the impact of the video and tied in nicely to the song. So you go to YouTube, check that out. You can go to Facebook, to Silverthorn's page. You can go to Twitter, to our page. I think that's Silverthorn HQ. But it's easy. It's as easy as just typing in Silverthorn, right? You go to Instagram, we're there, and we have, you know, our website. So you find it all pretty easily, and there's a whole mess of stuff there. There's little interviews regarding the single. There's some teasers prior to the single came out. We just keep putting a bunch of stuff up. So if you like the tune, thank you very much for taking the time to listen to it and digging it. There will be more soon. The next single, Black River Rising, is going to be out in about a month, and we're getting that all ready now. The EP will be out soon after that. And I just hope to be out there playing live, and anybody that digs it is able to get to wherever we are and see us, and we can get to you.
Well, that sounds awesome. Brian Tishy, you've been a wonderful guest. I enjoyed hearing all your stories and chatting with you. Silverthorn, Tear the Sky Wide Open, of course, I think it's an excellent song, and I do look forward to hearing the rest of the songs that you guys come up with. Pete's great, so I really look forward to hearing more of him. And overall, I just wish you all the best in the future, and hopefully everything comes up exactly as you want.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me, and thanks for all your kind words. Much appreciated.
All right. Well, hope to talk to you again soon, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Cool. You too, man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Brian. All right.
Okay.
All right. Bye now.